Welcome back to our show. I'm your host, Molly Darling, here with my co-host, Christian Rivera.
Hi, hi. I'm
and that guy. That guy. And our wonderful producer, Chris Lindstrom.
Also that guy.
Yeah.
I'm surrounded by those guys.
That guy show.
Basically.
I love it so Spin-off. Much. Well, thankfully, it's not just me and guys. There's another gal here today, which is exciting. We're excited to have Christy Gunther on the show with us today. She's an artist here in Rochester, New York, who creates wildlife paintings using acrylic paint on both canvas and paper. She has a studio at the Yards Art Collective located in the historic public market. Welcome to the show, Christy.
Yay.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited for you to be here too. I first met you at the Yards. I was thinking about it and I was like, oh, we actually met before you came to the residency at the Yards. Because you came to one of my social media classes,
yeah, you did
right?
An Instagram class.
Oh, man.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, times have changed. Yeah. So I'm so curious if you would walk us through a typical day in the life for you. Like, you have this beautiful studio at the Yards. You paint wildlife paintings. What's a typical day in the life look like for you?
Yeah, so I've had that studio space for just about a year now. So a typical day used to be roll out of bed and then walk upstairs to my studio. Uh-huh. But now it's, you know, get up. I'm not a morning person, so mornings are really slow for me. So I usually do, like, you know, some of my social media stuff in the morning and then, like, pack up to go to the studio. And usually I try to get in, like, 3 or 4 good hours of painting while I'm there. I find that, like, focus is a limited thing. That runs out. So mm-hmm. 3 to 4 hours a day of painting is usually what I can get done. And then, you know, I kind of go home and sometimes I'll continue working on, you know, ancillary stuff to the actual painting, like research for new paintings or sketches or what have you. But yeah, that's kind of a typical day.
Yeah, I love it. It's nice to have a place outside of the house. There Absolutely. Are good things and pros and cons of having a studio in the home and outside of it.
Yeah.
And when you're painting, what are the things that you're painting? And what is the research that you're doing? I'm so fascinated about that part too.
So a lot of the reason why I paint is, like, it's a way to interact with one of my major interests, which is animals and nature. So, like, for me, you know, when I do a painting of an animal, I'm doing a lot of research beforehand. If I'm doing something where the animal's going to be in a habitat, I want to know what that habitat looks like. I want to know what the animal looks like from all angles so I can really capture it accurately. But sometimes I want to do something that's completely off the wall. So a lot of the stuff I do is kind of whimsical and goofy. So it'll be kind of looking for inspiration for what situations I want to put the animal in that really wouldn't happen in real life.
And what kind of situations, for example?
Oh, well, there was one recently where I had a red panda and a raccoon being best friends, or, you know, just kind of hanging out together, which wouldn't happen in real life because they live on different continents. So,
I mean, I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah, they seem like they should
they look
be best
like they're,
friends.
They have
yeah.
the same energy. Yes.
Yeah.
Garbage bros.
Right.
Man, those Cuties. Videos of red pandas, like, bumbling all over themselves yeah. and yeah. falling, like, man, those falls are just the cutest thing ever.
I know. They
really probably
are.
Start their own podcast together.
Oh my gosh.
Pretty sure they could
the
be
red
on this
panda
network.
Podcast.
Yeah, the red panda and the raccoon podcast.
Isn't a red panda, like, your favorite animal?
It
Christian?
Is my favorite animal. They're I love best, red pandas. Yeah. They're the best. I don't know why. They're just, there's an energy about them, especially when they, like, kind of do the little skirt up, stand up thing. I don't know. Something about that energy post, is yeah. like, yeah, I'm going to pounce on you, but you're.
But I'm not
don't
intimidating,
claws,
but
you'll be,
pretend.
Yeah, but you'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that kind of thing. Yeah.
It'll actually be very comforting when I do pounce on you. Like
right, it's
hug.
Actually a hug. It looks like an attack, but I'm going to hug you. And
hug
you're
attack.
Love it. Yeah.
Red panda hug attack.
Yep.
That's amazing. It's actually funny because that's the painting that you are talking about right now is the one that went kind of viral on TikTok,
oh gosh,
right?
Yeah.
Is that a thing? I would love to talk about that because it's so, you know, we're a local show. We're talking about Rochester and, yep. you know, how Rochester affects our creativity. And we'll get to that.
Yep.
But you and I kind of spoke before the recording about this idea of going viral and how so many artists locally and not locally are on social media and thinking that going viral needs to be, like, the goal. Yeah. And not many have had the experience of going viral, and not just the pros that come with it, but maybe some of the challenges. So I would love to, for you to talk about that experience a little bit.
For sure. You think you want it, you don't want it. I'm going to tell you that right now. You don't.
That's all.
that sums it up. But I mean, the problem with going viral is with social media, if you're growing at a natural pace, you are reaching the people that are your people, and they're going to appreciate what you have to offer. Once you go viral, you are reaching like this huge swath of people that are way outside of that, who do not care about you, who aren't your people. Right. And so that is going to be an experience. So, you know, people get nasty. They don't understand what you're trying to do. And I can say that I don't think humans have the capacity to receive that amount of feedback from that number of people at once. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not healthy.
I think there's a number for it. I think it's Dunbar's number or something like that. 150 people, I think, is the the max to which we can like kind of hold information about people from. And I know from the idea of going viral, I mean, I've worked with clients who are like, how do we go viral? Oh. Especially in the mid 2010s, I worked for marketing firms, and it was always about how do we go viral?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, there's a certain like escape velocity that seems to happen, where it's just like you exit the stratosphere and it's your creation is no longer your creation anymore.
Right. And even when you do go viral, it often does not even translate to sales.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I put that painting up for sale after that happened, and the person who bought it already followed me for like 2 years.
Right. So like it was already your person.
Yeah.
Right.
Like right.
They were nurtured and ready to buy something.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like I don't need to reach millions of people. I just need like the 500 to 1,000 views that I get on a video to like
really
reach
you just need the one person to buy the thing.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I think it reminds me of like Andy Pizza, our friend who has the Creative Pep Talk podcast. He talks about having 1,000 true fans and 1,000 true fans that will pay up to, you know, $100 a year, which isn't really that much for an individual sale kind of a thing. And that gives you $100,000 of a salary. You know, it's like you only need this small number of people who are really, really obsessed with you, not so much the viral aspect.
And you know, the going viral, it will reach some people that you want it to as well. But like, there's the instant gratification thing that people want all of that now. But it's really only going to happen in a good way if you let it just be organic.
Yeah.
What do you think that taught you? Like, what was your kind of demeanor going into that versus coming out of it?
To put the phone away. Honestly, like I have realized, especially recently, like how attached I get to my phone and like checking all of that. Well, like when you're getting that amount of feedback, you got to just set it down. Otherwise, like, I mean, I tend on the anxious side. So like having that like compulsion to keep checking it and like, oh no, this person's being mean and this person, like, just put the phone away, like step away, take a break.
Especially for something that is by definition transient. I mean, the thing about viral things is it's momentary, but at the moment, it's just this, you know, huge wave of everything. It's everything all at once.
Yep.
But it is by definition momentary and transient, because even if you are the main character of the day on the internet, like people will forget about that in a week.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, you really never want to be the main character, but even something like this, which is like in context, like viral, but minor viral compared to the big stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And even then it's overwhelming. It's easy to forget that it's only going to last for so many days.
It's not worth the mental health hit that you can take from it.
Yeah. No,
and it's like, it's making me think of the idea of place and context. And one of the reasons that we started this podcast was to really get grounded in place and context, you know, Rochester, New York, where we are, what's actually happening here tangibly in front of us. And when you go viral like that, it's no one has context, you know, somebody who's clearly not your person gets this thing. And then they're complaining to you about how you painted it to make it better. Cause there was like a whole thing, right? Where you edited
out
the painting.
Mistake. Yeah. I made a mistake in the painting and like I fixed it. That was the video.
Yeah.
And people were real bent out of shape about that.
They were very mad that you fixed that. It was like there was a fuzzy tail, right, yeah, of the red panda. And
it wasn't, the perspective was not correct, so it would not have looked like that in real life. And like people were just disagreeing with me that was the case. And then other people were pointing out other things about the painting they didn't like, or complaining that I cared about the proportions of the tail when I was painting a scene that wouldn't happen in real life to begin with. So it was just all of this noise.
Right. Yeah. A lot of comments that I was looking through them, and it was like, these are just so weird.
So it's out of pocket. Yeah.
So out of pocket and such a waste of time. Just very much like, oh, it's so sad that you painted over the tail
and put this
beautiful mossy covered like tree branch in front of the tail.
Crying in the corner in a fetal position. The tail.
Oh, no.
The tail has been painted over. Oh, no, my life.
Awful.
Is over.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people get invested in like the weirdest things.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That's a whole bigger philosophical discussion. But to your point, Molly, it's bringing home the idea that like thinking more focused and more locally, frankly, like 1,000 true fans can exist in your town, which I think is why we talk about this stuff here on this podcast. Mm-hmm. That's a toss up transition to you to ask another question.
Well, but it's also like there's a balance. One of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you is because you're active both locally and on the internet, because, you know, again, we met through an Instagram class that I was teaching. So I'm not a stranger to social media and using it. It's like, even if you have fans locally, you might not necessarily get enough sales or have the context that you need in an area like Rochester to be able to make the sales, to make a living. So I think it's important to have that balance. And I'm wondering for you, how has that been? Like the experience of balancing the local shows and having collectors locally and then also online, particularly on TikTok, because you've just been blowing up on there.
Well, it is definitely a balance, because I have to kind of, because I do a lot of local markets.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to kind of balance like, what is it that I'm releasing for sale online and what is it that I'm saving to bring to these shows? And sometimes I do a really bad job of like balancing like, I sold these things online. Now what do I bring to these markets?
Right.
So that's been a balancing act that I have to get better at. But the local shows have been a really amazing thing. Being in a studio with other artists has been a really amazing thing. Mm-hmm. It's all very new, like within the last year of really being more involved in the local community. I mean, I've been doing markets for a lot longer than that, but I feel more plugged in now than I did a couple years ago, especially, you know, since lockdown, because I think that had a huge effect on like a feeling of isolation. And it took a few years to kind of like break out of that and want to be like with people again.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And what were some of the local communities and things that really helped you move from isolation to being in community a little more?
Definitely the yards, like you mentioned, where I have my studio. The way I got involved there with, you know, in addition to knowing about it from the class I took from you, was they were doing a residency. And I kind of applied to it. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to probably get into it, but this would be a cool thing to do and like a way to push me out of my comfort zone. You know, get feedback from other artists that are like working side by side with me in the same space. And I did get the residency, and it was a fantastic experience. You know, having a critique for the first time in like since college was a great experience. I didn't realize how much I missed having that like feedback from other artists and professionals. So that's been a huge thing, and just like being involved in gallery shows. That's like a new thing that I'm trying to, you know, just put my work out in new ways that are local. So. Yeah.
Yeah. And the scale of your work changed quite a bit when you were in the residency, because I had a studio at the Arts at the time of your residency. Yeah. And so that was one of my favorite parts of being in the studio, was watching, you know, the development of the artists who were in the residency. And I remember in the beginning, you had these tiny little beautiful, intricately detailed paintings of like, you know, raccoons and all the things. And then by the end, you had made this massive painting of, was it like iguana scales?
Chameleon scales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was so beautiful and abstract while still being on your theme of animals.
Yeah.
And you have a new painting that you just completed that's also brilliant. Do you want to talk about that a little bit too?
Yeah. So this one is a close-up of elephant wrinkles. So like really zoomed in. I named it elephant topography because it almost looks like map-like.
I love that.
Yeah. So this one was inspired by the Seneca Park Zoo is doing a call for art for an exhibition, which, you know, I'm not assuming I'm going to get in or anything, but I wanted to do this piece for it because I thought it would be fitting because it's all about, like, you know, the animals that we're trying to protect and their habitats and everything. So that was definitely the hardest painting I've ever done. Also a big one. So I'm really trying to push the size of my work.
Yeah, and for scale, for those who are listening, and obviously we don't have visuals, but we'll add links in the show notes. How big is this painting?
It's a 30-inch circle canvas.
Yeah. And all these tiny details of, like, elephant wrinkles. It's really, really brilliant, and I love it. So I'm wondering about living in Rochester, and, you know, you're in the residency, and you're in this collaborative space. How did that change you as an artist, and how has being at the Yards changed you?
I think it's made me need to, like, talk, put my work into words more.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause I'm around other artists, we're talking about art. Like, I have to be able to talk about my work, which isn't something that I had a lot of practice doing. Like, I can do that on social media and, like, kind of, you know, edit myself and, you know, take a long time to come up with a written, you know, artist statement, but, like, you know, talking one-on-one with people and, you know, getting ideas from them and finding a way to just express what I'm trying to do in words. Like, yeah, the art, we want the art to speak for itself somewhat, but, like, learning to do that verbally is a huge skill for artists.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's also so interesting because I know personally, like, I struggle with the opposite. Mm. Like, if you ask me to sit down and write stuff, I can do it, but unless it's just vomiting facts at people, if I'm trying to get my thoughts out in a way that is grabbing and is, you know, has, you know, a, you know, emotional through line or things like that, I would much rather be engaging with somebody because I can pace, I can see the threads of what's going on and, you know, push and pull.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to hear somebody where they, you know, the curation of, you can really focus your thoughts into a tight message being comforting versus nerving.
Well, I think, I mean, are you an extrovert?
I function in many different ways. I can control a conversation really easily, but it's mostly because I enjoy the challenge of it. And it's not like, it was weird. I was describing to my wife the other day, is like, I don't have fun in any, like, definable sense of the word, but I really enjoy lots of things. Yeah, and I love the analytical and figuring out how things work.
Yeah.
And weirdly, like, I, like, conversations often feel like that to me.
Okay.
Because it's like, I know that, you know, by working with somebody in this way, that I know that we're going to have a great time enjoying that. But you know, you can use those pauses for effect. You can do this, you can do that.
Right.
While writing, like, I'm just thinking way too much about every word that's going down.
Yeah.
I process a lot internally. Like, I'm very introverted. I process everything in my head, and then I feel like I can say it when I'm ready to, like, when I have it formulated. Mm-hmm. But I think it's good to push yourself outside of what you necessarily feel comfortable with.
Yeah. So. Is that the same way with imagery too? Do you construct imagery in your mind and then it happens?
Yeah.
Or are you exploring?
Yeah. Like, I don't necessarily just sketch everything to figure it out. Like, I have a lot of internal, like, imagining things in my brain before I even start anything on paper or canvas. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I always have personality related questions because I am kind of obsessed with that sort of thing.
Fascinated with
it. But generally also in terms of art and creating art, it's fascinating, this idea of, like, showing something versus explaining something, because I find that a lot of people will see a piece of art that is abstract or appears abstract and they're like, I don't know what I'm looking at. And they usually do need kind of words to almost, like, as training wheels to get them to see it.
Yeah.
In a way, not exactly see what your vision is necessarily, but to see something. It's like, it's fuzzy until they have words. to explain it. I don't know if that's something you can speak to, Molly, also around like your relationship to having to, because you do more abstract stuff that
I was going to say, in the last year, I've really learned a lot about how to describe it, because for a while, you know, and this is my story, obviously, but it's like a lot of my stuff being so abstract, I've learned that I need some sort of like word tether for people, at least some starting point to understand, even if that starting point is this is abstraction and it's about feelings expression. But over time, I've learned like, oh, actually, I need to explain more and I need to be willing to be a little more vulnerable with what's going on inside and not just put it out there at face value. Have you like had a similar experience?
Well, I mean, I don't know if this exactly am going to answer this in the right way, but I was thinking a lot about what I see versus what the viewer is going to see at the end. And so I think there's a different, my experience is so much different than the viewer is going to be, because I guarantee you no one has stared at my subject, or no one's going to stare at my painting for as long as I've stared at my subject. So like a lot about my process for me is, I heard this on a podcast, another art podcast, like called the Not Sorry Art Podcast, where realism was described as not so much being just capturing a subject, but more about the process of seeing, like the experience of seeing. So for me, on my end, it's all about seeing and then translating what I see. And then like, what do I want the viewer to see? Because they're not going to see every little thing that I did.
Right.
Right.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a little bit of like a mini training that goes on to like train someone how to see a little bit.
Yeah.
There's this funny quick little story about a neighbor of ours. I was bringing some of Molly's art into our house and he was like, oh, are you an artist? I was like, my wife is. And he's like, what's that supposed to be? It was like across the parking lot.
Our neighbors are adorable.
It was across the parking lot. And he was like, what's that supposed to be? I'm like, it's abstract. There's a, you know, there's some colors and there's a thing and the thing. And he was like, I mean, I have a hard time with those, but I hear if you take mushrooms or some DMT, it helps out a lot. So I'm like, yeah, that definitely gets you there, right? So, you know, drugs. No, I'm kidding. Don't do drugs. Don't do them, at least in terms of liability.
Sponsored by drugs.
And speaking of drugs, we're going to take our break and we'll be right back. I'm Chris Lindstrom, the host of the Food About Town podcast. If you want to learn more about the Rochester food and drink scene and beyond, with a good dose of nerdery and personal stories on top, then Food About Town is for you. I've been writing and podcasting for over 10 years, and I'm so thankful for all the support from the community. Subscribe to the Food About Town podcast today and hear from the people that make and love the food and beverages you can't stop enjoying.
So you mentioned at some point we were talking about your research and a little bit about how when you're perusing through that research, an image comes to your mind, or you're kind of working through a bunch of different imagery in your mind to come up with essentially a concept or a look or an idea. I'm a little fuzzy on the specifics. So I want to ask, like, what is that whole research to conception, like visually in your mind? What's that process like for you getting from research to something you want to make?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces there. Like, it's not just one thing that I do. Like there's so many different components. Like, I'm inspired by like my hikes, so I take a ton of pictures. So I have some like environmental inspiration. I tend to gravitate toward animals that are seen as a little goofy or scary or like not conventionally cute. So like I have all of that swirling in around in my head. And so like at some point things will like kind of make combinations or like connections, or like, wouldn't it be funny if these two animals were together? Or wouldn't it be funny if I'm trying to think of how I came up with the idea to do animal portraits with like candy and cupcakes around them.
Yeah.
But I think it was something where I just thought it would make people laugh. And I knew I would enjoy like the colorful nature of it. So like it's a combination of things that sometimes just, I don't want to say it just pops into my head, but sometimes it does. It's like doing all the research and being outside and like looking up different animals. It's like breathing in the inspiration and everything, and eventually things will kind of like combine. And yeah, sometimes it's like, oh, I'm just happen to be obsessed with this particular animal right now, so I'm going to paint a whole series of raccoons.
Right.
I just think they're neat.
Right. Because they are. Yeah.
And but they have get together with a red panda.
Their fingers can all touch. They're the only other thing besides humans that can touch all their fingers to their little thumb.
Yeah. But what I love about it is the fact that like I can decide to paint something just because like, oh, this would be adorable, but I look at people's reactions. This is why doing local things is so important, because you can see like how people react physically to what you're putting in front of them. Mm. And like you can see people
do a
double take. And that's what I want. I want people to like have to look again, because like I spent hours and hours looking at this animal. You got to at least look a second time.
Right. Yeah. Take a moment.
So I think that's why I kind of gravitate toward either doing some goofy, silly stuff or, you know, zooming in like I did with that elephant wrinkles, is like I want people to have to look again. So I think that's kind of the through line that's going through my brain.
Yeah.
Like what's going to make people have a reaction?
Yeah. And that's so interesting. I always love diving into, and one of the sort of underlying ethos things that we're trying to pull out from this podcast is like the different ways that people think, let alone the different ways that creatives think.
Yeah.
Right. Like somebody might be looking for feedback in a completely different way. Like the numbers feedback might be valuable to them, whereas you figured out essentially that like seeing someone's reaction or like micro expressions or double takes or something like that suddenly is like, oh, that makes sense to me. I know how to respond to that. I know how to adjust to that. And I know how to be creative based on that.
Yeah. And if you're only going by like online sales, you don't know what people are reacting to.
Right.
I mean, on selling stuff online, like I've had some success with that, but like you really don't get the market research that you do with people just reacting to your work in real time, right in front of you. Mm-hmm.
Has that changed your creative process? Like in terms of starting to get feedback? Like I think of it as being in a feedback loop. So now you're like, I know where to go. I know who to talk to. Maybe you know what shows to go to locally, like because you're getting certain types of feedback. Has that changed your approach to, I guess both the creative side and the business side of things?
Well, I mean, when someone has a reaction to a particular thing, I definitely want to make more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If I did one painting of something, like let's bring it back to the red panda and raccoon painting.
Yes.
I now want to do a whole series of paintings that are like animal friends that are unlikely. So like, I mean, people react a certain way and it makes me want to like, let's dive into that a little bit more.
Drop in the comments below. What are your favorite unlikely animal pairings?
I personally would like to see a whole series of those two, like the raccoon and the red panda in different poses. Yeah, you know, like Frog and Toad are friends, but like raccoon and red panda are friends. And then maybe we make a kid's book series. Oh, I don't know, just an idea.
I mean, that's a whole interesting exploration, right? Are they craft beer?
I wouldn't have thought of that.
Right? Are they craft beer buddies? Are they tea time buddies?
What do they do together?
Yeah, they're you know? They're
partners
they're bros,
in crime.
Yeah. They're like, IPA bros.
They're IPA
bros.
Yeah. It's so funny because, like, I love the Friends idea and, like, the, you know, the comic stories of them, because you could do realism, you could do comic fun. I remember one of my wife's friends at one point was doing hybrid animals, and everybody's coming up with all these cute ones. And I'm like, could you cross a polar bear and a possum? I want a polar bossum. I want polar that thing bossum. To be a terror. Yes. With a giant terror mouth.
Polossum.
Because like there's so many different directions you can take this. Like it's like
which side is on which end?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which side is on which end?
Yeah, this is the cat dog situation.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Just two butts.
Yeah.
Just tied together.
Shout out to Tom Six.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Well, and that made me think of your capybara piece, which was one of the sweets pieces.
Yeah.
Was the inspiration for that the viral song? The capybara.
No.
Capybara.
I think
it helped though.
I started painting that before I even heard, like it might've been going around, but I was painting that painting before I knew about it. The inspiration for that series though, like all of my series seem to connect somehow. Cause like I did the whole series of raccoons, and one of those raccoons was a raccoon with macaron, French macaron cookies in the background. Mm-hmm. So I was like, now I want to do a whole series of
as
animals
they do.
With sweets as, yes. in the background,
obviously.
Yeah. They love patisserie.
I mean,
they would
doesn't?
Eat them, I'm sure.
100%.
Animals and French pastries. It's a whole series right there, right? This stuff just writes itself.
It really does.
Honestly. I'm also curious, you know, getting feedback and playing with these creative ideas and the different animal series that we're coming up with on the spot right now. I'm curious how, you know, these conversations, not only with people who are viewing your art, but now you are in Rochester, like connected to all of these creatives and other people that are doing other things. How has that influenced your process and ability to brainstorm and all of that? Does that make sense as a question?
Yes, and I'm thinking.
Yeah, take your time. Mm-hmm. I can just go dead air for 20 minutes. Dead air.
No, well, I mean, it's definitely, I can't think of an example of this off the top of my head, but like someone will always point out something that I didn't think about my own painting. Mm. So that's always nice to like get a different perspective on what I've painted that I didn't think about. It also helps like to see what other artists are doing as far as like, what else can you make your art into after it's a painting? Like, because there, you know, to have that extra income, a second life for a piece of artwork is always important. So, mm-hmm. I get inspiration for what else artists are doing with that kind of thing.
Yeah, and actually that I'm intrigued for on the part of our audience about that. Like, what are some of the ways that you give your paintings second life as far as income sources? Because it's really, really helpful things to talk about, especially for local artists that are still figuring their ish out.
Yeah, well, I like to go to shows that are, like, they're going to be accessible for everyone. So, you know, not everyone is going to be wanting to drop a lot of money on an original. So as soon as I have that image of my painting, I put it on, you know, I make it into prints, I make it into greeting cards, stickers, magnets, bookmarks. And I'm not like designing the piece of art with that in mind. I kind of like let that happen organically. Like, oh, this is the perfect shape or like composition to fit into this format. And then I kind of let the format decide what I'm doing with it. So
it changes the focus too, because you could take a subsection of a piece and turn to something that is a completely different lens on the same thing.
Yeah, I'll often like zoom into a certain part of it or, you know, yeah. So, mm-hmm.
yeah. And I think it's really important, this idea of repurposing art, mm-hmm. Because it's, you know, in a traditional sense, it's like you make a painting and you give it to a gallery and the gallery sells it maybe in months or years or maybe never for like however many thousand dollars is like the traditional kind of old school way of thinking about it. And everything has changed since social media and the ability to do drop shipping and make merch. And it's like, there's so much accessibility to be able to have a business as an artist. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. And back when I first decided I wanted to do something with art as a career, like I only thought the options were either you were a commercial artist, you were illustrator, graphic designer, whatever, mm-hmm. or you were represented by a gallery.
Right.
This was like back in 2005. So maybe those were the only options. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until years after that where I realized like, oh, people are just making what they want and giving it directly to people. And you don't have to, there's a prevailing, a lot of people will say, well, you're devaluing the art by making it. And like, I cannot get on board with that because everyone deserves to have, you know, things that bring them joy. Mm-hmm. And if I can like make my art into different formats to bring that to them, that's what I want.
Yeah. Well, and really like the entire market has changed.
Yeah.
It's not the same as it was even 5 years ago. You know, like there's the ability to mint NFTs. There's, you can do digital work. You can do, you know, like sell it as PDFs. Like I have a digital pack of memes for $15 nice. On my website, you know, cause I'm the same way. I want it to be accessible, but then also have these other pieces that if there is a big highfalutin collector out there who wants to buy my $5,000 piece, you know, yeah, go to thedarlingrevolution.org and buy it.
And that's where you don't have to feel bad about charging what the piece is worth because
exactly.
you have it available in all these other formats mm-hmm. for different budgets.
Yeah. And I feel like that's being a smart business owner as well as an artist. So as we're starting to wrap up here, I'm wondering, what advice would you give to aspiring artists, particularly in the Rochester area, who are maybe, or beyond, who are listening to this show and are just like, oh, that sounds great, but overwhelming, where do I start?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I've been seeing a lot of conversations online, like, of artists getting started and just assuming that everything has to be on the internet and that's all they're, that's where all of their reach has to come from. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage them, if you are like not getting involved in your local community, you're missing out on like, not just like, you know, ways to make money, but like, meeting people and making, forming relationships. So that's a huge one. And then also just like a more practical, well, I mean, that's practical too, but, as far as like, I see a lot of, beginning artists struggling with style. I think that's a really big one that everyone's like all in their head about how to figure out what their style is. And I just want to say, like, you just make the art and that'll come. Mm-hmm. And like what I was talking about before about like seeing your subject, you know, specifically for realism, obviously, but like the way you see the world is not going to be the same as the way someone else sees the world. The way you move your hand isn't going to be the same as someone else does it. So those things are just, those are the ways that style forms. So.
And you mean by style, like they're trying to be unique?
Yeah. Like, oh, I need to find my signature style.
Right. Yeah.
No,
you already have it because you exist.
You are you.
Yeah.
That is your style.
Right. And that will emerge.
It's going to be okay.
That will emerge from the work over
just
time.
Just make so much art. Just keep making art and make a lot of garbage art and make a lot of messy art and make a lot of ugly art. And like, yeah, it'll emerge. Yeah. So
there's something about, when you can truly say, and people can see it in your work too, if you've done that practice, if you've done all the steps in between, people know when you know who you are, which is the hardest thing to say about yourself, is that you really know yourself. Yeah. Truly, but the work tends to reflect that when you're confident that you're making what you wanted to make. Mm-hmm. And you never know until you've started doing it if you've made what you want to make either.
Right. That's why you got to let yourself do the ugly stuff.
Because you literally don't, even with my work in abstract and stuff, I always say that the only way that I know I've crossed the line is crossing it. I'm like, oh, I fucked that one up.
Oh, I'm there. All right.
Well, now I know for next time that far is too far. You know, it's like you have to embody it first. And also that the most important work of the artist really is the internal work. It's the inside job of really letting yourself practice those skills, but then also letting yourself be who you are, you know? So for you, Christy, looking forward, what are your aspirations as an artist, both within and beyond the Rochester community?
So project-wise, like I talked earlier about how I love to hike, and that's like part of my inspiration. Mm-hmm. I have so much visual, like a library of visuals, pictures from those hikes, and I want to make like a massive series from all that, like especially from the local parks, because I go to all the parks around the area. That's one of my favorite places, favorite things about Rochester is how many like outdoor spaces there are. So I think that's something I want to produce as an artist, is just a, you know, local nature series. I think that's something I'm really excited about.
I love that.
Yeah. That's what I got.
Especially from your own lens too, because people that just do straight landscapes, and there's nothing wrong with that. I love those. They're beautiful. Yeah. But well, taking your own view on what you've seen is the fun part.
And what I notice about the pictures I take is it's all zoomed in on little things.
Tiny details.
Yeah. No one's surprised. Like all the lichen on tree bark and like tiny mushrooms and like the moss and stuff. Like I always look down at the micro, because that, like, I feel like people miss out on that because they're looking at the, like, the landscapes, which also are awesome. But
it's such a beautiful, unique expression of what you bring as an artist and as a person, because like you said, it's like people aren't typically looking at that.
Yeah.
Like, and I think of that when I walk into rooms a lot. I look at the ceiling. It's like we don't look up, really. It's just like an interesting thing to notice details in different places that we're not usually looking at.
I feel like me as an artist is summed up by just, hey, look at this. This is cool.
Heck yeah. So is there any projects on the horizon? I know you said you just completed that elephant skin piece, hopefully getting into Seneca Park Zoo. We'll see. Ooh, anything we'll see. Else you got going on?
I'm currently painting animals wearing bow ties.
I love this series so much.
That's exciting.
There is a raccoon, right?
There is not. I'm not doing a
raccoon. There should be.
Wow. Well, I feel like raccoons have had their moment. I'm sure. For me, like,
yes,
I will come back
to them
eventually.
I think they will disagree.
But there are so many more animals. There's so many more animals.
You've got at least two or three.
At least two or three more animals.
At least two or three more. Yeah. There are some. Amazing. And where can folks find you online if they want to check out your work?
Yeah, I am on all the socials at K Gunther Art. And don't forget the E in Gunther.
I'll put that in the show notes so that you don't, you know. Yes. Okay. Right. Great. Thank you so much for being on the show, Christy. Great,
thanks for being on the Trash Panda podcast. Yeah.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
We take a look at all the hands. Hey there, coffee lovers. Do you want to make your morning cup of Joe something special? Let's talk about Joe Bean Coffee, a gem right here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador. I've been a longtime fan of Joe Bean. Kathy, Dina, and the whole team are passionate about their coffee and this city, and it comes through in every cup of Joe Bean Coffee that I brew at home. Joe Bean has been a part of Rochester for years, over a decade, building lasting community and a sense of belonging for everyone who loves coffee. Next time you need beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. Even better, subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and you'll receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule and never be without your favorite coffee. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care.